This podcast is about unsolved mysteries. Whenever possible, Mark and Kim have participated in recreating the events. What you are about to hear is not a news broadcast.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm all right, Kim. How are you doing this day of unsolved mysteries?
Oh, I am great. I am so ready to dive into this alien special. We're talking season 7, episode 21. It's called Mysteries of Alien Beings.
This one takes me back.
You know, can I say, before I started watching Unsolved Mysteries religiously, just, you know, when I was a child and I was kind of vaguely aware of it, I thought that it was all aliens all the time.
Really? I think you're even seeing it now. It really isn't that much having to do with UFOs and aliens and unidentified things.
You know, I was trying to find specifically an alien episode because I just couldn't believe that you and I hadn't covered one so far.
Yeah.
So I figured what better way to jump in than this all alien special?
It's a lot of alien here. Mm-hmm. there's a lot. They really do the big kahunas. They leave out a couple ones that I personally think are a lot more fascinating, but we do get the big ones. We get the history. We get to go back years and hundreds of years to see these etchings or drawings or paintings that might show remnants of a history of UFOs, of sightings, right?
Yeah, back in the 1500s.
Now, I love to bring up to people, and I'm not going to go too far in this, but, you know, I have another podcast called On the Odd, where I speak to a lot of people who believe they are abducted. They believe they're a big part of all of this. For instance, Kathleen Mardar, I'm not remembering her name correctly, but she's one of the lead people at MUFON. MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network. And it's an organization that has been around for a very long time, and they do really excellent investigations, legitimately good investigations. And it's, without going too far into all of this, I just wanted to mention that I love to talk about this kind of stuff. So I'm going to try not to go too far down into a lot of these things. But at the same time, I love to bring up little facts that people might not know, because you might meet a Christian or a Jewish person who believe in the Old Testament. And I say, well, there's a UFO sighting in the Bible, you know. And I don't, have you ever heard of this?
Only today when I read your notes, but please tell us.
In the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel states, I believe when he was 13 years old, he looked up into the sky and he saw an immense cloud flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. And the center of the fire looked like glowing metal. Five is the chapter or the book. I'm not really sure how that works. Not too into the Bible. And essentially what he's talking about is the appearance of a form of human coming off this craft that was flying in the air, a glowing metal. So it's a throwback to something. You know, we're supposed to, if we're going to analyze it from a King James focus, we're going to see it as an angel. It's the gold that we hear about in heaven, and the heavens are upon us, and it's a sign from God, because Ezekiel, of course, was a prophet. And we look at it now, we're like, wow, that sounds like a UFO to me.
Yeah, well, interesting that you bring that up, because they reference in here a painting of a Madonna and child with what appears to be somebody on the ground scoping out a UFO in the background.
And I think these type of things are not completely uncommon, especially in religious symbolism. for instance, a halo. A lot of people think when they show a person with a halo, what they're actually showing is a UFO behind their head. Hmm. I don't know. I'm not. It's a way of depicting it. Perhaps we did. There were things in the air. I've spoken to a lot of people who have made real careers in aeronautics, like John Lear. John Lear is the great-grandson of the inventor of the Lear jet. And he's a big advocate for these type of things. He believes that the history does go that far back. And he has very out there theories about a hollow moon and moon bases, and that what these UFOs actually are time traveling humans from the future. Hmm. I laugh because it is out there. It's something that I've told people, and I get that look, and it's like, hold on, this isn't my theory.
Well, speaking of your theory, what are your thoughts about aliens, if I could?
Asked this question on Facebook, and my answer to this question internally is very complicated, but I think what I wrote is still pretty much the way I feel. I think it's egotistical to feel we're the only living things here. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. I believe that's possible, and I think it's probable, actually.
But what about you? Same. I think it's more likely than not that there is life out there, and whatever life means to you. I mean, I don't know if it's like advanced civilizations, if it's a bacteria, whatever it is, you know. But I don't personally buy into the stereotypical alien with like the misshapen head that's all green with four fingers. Like
that's Zeta Reticula.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
the Greys. They're from, the Zeta Reticuli. Those are the typical stereotypical Greys.
Okay, so that's what I don't personally believe in, but yeah. I don't know. So I'm keeping an open mind.
Now, what about, I don't want to bring up things that don't have too much to do with this episode, but I'm going to guess in the future we're going to be able to bring up the alien autopsy videos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you ever watched those or...
No, I haven't. As fascinated as I am with death and all that, I've never watched an alien or human autopsy video.
Yeah, that's true. I've actually recently, I used to work in, I think I told you, it was kind of a head shop, esoteric, weird place when I was younger. And it was, I was a co-owner of it, but I also, the person who I kind of bought in with, his name is Bob Davis. And Bob is very much deep into the UFO world, especially on Long Island, which it's very, very deep here. But now he's on the West Coast and he's meeting all these new people. Not just now, he moved there 20 years ago. But he's introducing me to people who actually brought to the forefront the alien autopsy video. Mm. And that's very interesting to me. I just, it's still a very living and it's still a very forward topic. Even this week, for instance, we have the official release of certain videos of a UFO. I don't know if you caught that.
I did. I was like, oh my goodness, the Pentagon released them?
Yeah, the Pentagon released them to debunk them. I mean, we're not really sure. The thing's going 25 times faster than an F-14, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was just wild since you and I were already researching this topic that happened.
Perfectly timed. Mm-hmm. Tom DeLonge is the head of an investigation of a service. I don't know what you can really call them. I'm forgetting the name of it exactly, but it's a type of, do you know who Tom DeLonge is?
Yeah. He's from Blink-182.
Yeah. Which is immediately going to make me think. And from what I understand, everything he knows about UFOs, he learned on a tour bus in a bunch of books. So for me, that's kind of weird, but he started this To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science. Hmm. And he has a decent amount of money, apparently, from the Blink 182 hits. And he hired a lot of really amazing people, scientists and people who study this phenomenon. And he's brought a lot to the forefront, and he was instrumental in getting that video to the public.
Okay, cool.
I don't know how that translates to money.
Yeah.
I know that he was taking investments. I don't know how you get a return on investment. It's none of my business. It's not something I would invest in personally. But anyway, so that aside, there's a lot still going on in the UFO world. But yeah, we go back over 20 years ago, and it's pretty much exactly where it is today.
I totally agree. This Unsolved Mysteries could have been made today. But we seem to start talking UFOs, at least in America, in 1947.
Yeah. So, and that's Roswell, New Mexico. Everyone knows about this one. There's a TV show called Roswell. Have you ever been to Roswell?
No, I don't think I have.
Me either. I don't. I'm staying away from New Mexico. I was afraid of the Mexicans. Apparently, there aren't any.
Okay.
So, yeah, I really want to go there. And it's, you know, Roswell's like a crazy place right now, from what I understand. It's a tourist trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picture just like lots of souvenir shops with little alien bobbleheads and stuff.
So you have been there.
That's what's in my mind's eye.
Yeah, I mean, so something crashed. The government kind of swooped in to grab it. This is, I mean, I'm just going to tell the story in a very basic way because I don't think there's much to it.
Please.
Something crashed in the desert. In a period of time where a lot of new crafts are being tested. I mean, this is right after World War II. This is right, you know, we have to remember Project Paperclip is, do you know Project Paperclip by any chance? This is the government run, this is not a conspiracy theory. this is the Americans basically brought the Nazi scientists to work for us. And that's Project Paperclip. And so the Nazis were working on these type of anti-gravitational machines and all types of crazy, screwy, crazy fringe sciences. So what better than to bring these scientists here and get them to work for us? Like, we'll give you immunity, you friggin' Nazi, but you got to work for us. And that was the deal that was made.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of our technology comes from Hitler. So. Thank you. So terrible. All right, so they are testing a lot of things, in my opinion. And this includes crafts, and where better to test crafts than in the middle of the desert?
Totally.
This is, it's a known fact. The government does this. If you've ever seen the movie The Right Stuff, they even show the test pilots getting up to the point of being an astronaut and how they're doing all types of crashes and trying to break the sound barrier. And it's a wonderful primer on what's going on in the country during this period of time. Does not touch on UFOs. Unless you count our UFO, which is spaceship. So yeah, the bottom line is something crashed. The government swoops in, grabs this craft. This is where things get hazy. We have now possessed this craft. We have it in our possession. And this is where the theories go every single way, right?
Right.
We have, what's his first name? Marcel.
Jesse.
Jesse Marcel Sr. Is a big part of it. He actually handled the material.
There's pictures of him with it, which we'll post on the Facebook page.
Yeah, and I don't believe that the material is, it vanished, right?
Yeah, we meet on this Unsolved Mysteries, his son. So we meet Jesse Jr., who says that they're just like sitting around having dinner and this spaceship, this craft, whatever it is just like on their table and they're all kind of touching it and being like, what is this thing? I don't know. What do you think? So it seems like it was in their house.
But then I heard stories that it wasn't. This story has changed so many times. It is insane. The person who I was talking about the other day, Stanton Friedman, was the person who was instrumental in getting Jesse Marcel Sr. to actually come forward in 1978. And it's basically how Stanton made a public name as a UFOologist. UFOlogist, I guess? and he wrote, he even wrote the foreword to Marcel Jr.'s book that was recently released. I've really heard it so many different ways, and there's, they talk about the Egyptian-like hieroglyphics. No evidence, really, to back up any of this.
The only thing that we see for sure with Jesse Sr. is that he's standing and he's holding this stuff that looks just like foil-like material. It's silver. It's kind of crumpled up. So we see that for sure. If I could see the I-beam with the hieroglyphics, I would totally let you know, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at possibly a part of a an early piece of titanium. I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, we've also, there's also that theory of the material being as thin as aluminum foil, but you could take a sledgehammer to it and it does nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it crashed and it got destroyed. So the impact would be just, that's where things kind of fall apart for me. For something to hit the earth so hard and crumble, it would have to create such a blast that it would be, everybody would hear it.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
And a crater. Like, there's no crater.
Yeah.
But of course, it's all dismissed because once you start getting into theoretical physics and like, well, you know, it's dispersing energy and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And it's hard to go against something that there's no evidence to support one way or the other.
I totally feel the same way. Like, I suggested this episode. I'm glad we did it, but I was like, I just wanted a fact that I could grasp onto, like murder, straightforward. Yeah. I could figure that one out. But this was like, fringe, who do you believe? Yeah. And there's so many tributaries that lead off of every topic. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I was having such a hard time just getting my facts down on paper.
The problem is, and you just use the word believe. That's part of this. That's a part of the entire culture of UFOs. There's a certain, it's almost a religion where you have to have a certain level of belief. And I don't know. I don't know if I need to have facts in my life that don't exist unless I believe in them personally.
So sure.
That's where it falls apart for me. Personally, I don't believe anything happened in Roswell outside of a military crash. That's it. Well, that's all I believe.
People were saying that there was like bodies on the ground and their skin wasn't human. But then I've read that it was a military experimental craft, that it was up to test for atomic weapons and stuff. Like that was an experimental thing. And it did crash, and they were crash test dummies that were on the ground. So that's not human. And I could see if it get burned up or something like that. Like, I could see how it would look not human. So I don't know. There's a simple answer that explains away a lot of this stuff.
No, I did make a little note here that predates Roswell. And personally, I think it's a far better story. But I'm just going to mention it real quick. And I'm hoping that it pops up on Unsolved Mysteries and we've missed it. But it's called The Battle of Los Angeles. And it's something that happened 5 years before Roswell. This was this is a battle that I believe is off the top of my head, about 12 hours, where these lights were in the sky. And the entire military on the West Coast took to air to attack this. And they could not destroy it. We're talking, people were documenting being up all night from all the gunfire and missiles being launched. And the havoc that was being created for hours and hours and hours.
Wow. I can't wait to look into that deeper. That sounds fascinating.
It just vanished. You know, it just kind of went away.
Huh.
And the East Coast never reported on it.
Okay. Weird.
So the next morning you wake up and it's like, you know, Dodgers win. It's like, wait. There was just a war going on in LA. So, whoa, and there's some crappy photos, but there's more evidence to support that as a genuine unexplained phenomenon. But it unexplained with the military completely going ape crap at this thing. And people are like, well, it was Nazis for 12 hours, a war. Like, you know, it's crazy.
In 1942, I don't know how much this has to do with it, but this is 4 years after the whole War of the Worlds radio show debacle.
But this is evident. Now, this actually happened in the sense of even the military admits that you know, things were launched, but you're saying the imagination?
Exactly. I fully believe that that happened. I'm just saying, like, it seems like alien panic was kind of at a high.
But people didn't report on it. It's just crazy to me that weird. It just, you know, at the time where the internet didn't exist, you know, in New York, obviously you have no idea what's going on in LA, and boom, no, we're not going to release that. Don't tell the New York Times.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. And so, yeah, that's a fun story. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Great.
But all right, with Roswell, we cannot bring up Roswell without talking about Area 51, right?
Absolutely.
Area 51 is, I mean, what's your opinion of what Area 51 is?
I think it's probably, just off the top of my head, I think it's probably a military testing thing where they, like a site where they do experimental tests and stuff like that. But, okay, here's my thing. They're saying on Unsolved Mysteries that the military denies that it even exists, but you can see it.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets really shady with me. If you tell me it's a top secret thing that you're not allowed to know about, okay, I can respect that. I'm curious, but if you're telling me that what I'm seeing with my eyes is not what I'm seeing with my own eyes, like that's really weird to me.
I think that the denial of existence is more along the lines of they deny it being a UFO installation.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe
Yeah, I'm
that the
just.
government, as a matter of fact, going back to 2013, the government officially acknowledges the existence of Area 51 according to WAPO, Washington
Oh, okay.
Post. So of course they know it's there, but it's a testing facility. In my opinion, it's a testing facility. Now,
Yeah.
I don't mean to dismiss the believers of UFOs. I am one that believes on some level. I just don't
Same.
believe that these things. I just don't believe to the level that we're
Yeah.
talking about here. I don't believe that we have a warehouse full of UFOs, like a car show or something.
Like the end of Indiana Jones, where you
Well,
have all the
that I
secrets.
believe. No, I don't believe.
Oh. Well, can we talk about Glenn Dennis for a minute? Because I thought he had a really interesting story.
Yes.
So
Go.
Glenn Dennis is a mortician's assistant during the World War II. And he says that he was put in charge of the military contract with the Air Force base that was there with Roswell. So he, one day after this crash that happens in the field, he goes to Roswell to drive some injured man back to base. And he says that there was like military police all over the place, and they were telling him like, "You better get out of here." And as he's walking by, he like peeks into the ambulance and sees all the wreckage of this, quote unquote UFO. And
In an
he's
ambulance.
in an ambulance, like
Right.
it's all very hush hush, and they're pushing him along. So he says, like, "Whoa, something major must have went down. I see that there's a crash. Should I start preparing the funeral home, to get ready for these casualties that probably happened?" And they were like, "Who are you? You're unauthorized. You got to get out of here." And he was like, "Okay." So he goes to leave, and the guy supposedly says to him, like, "Hey, if you go starting rumors, they're going to be finding your bones in the desert." So
Right.
he's like, "Well, zip it, lock it, put it in my pocket." So he goes and he meets a nurse friend of his who said that they were doing like an alien autopsy, which released some kind of noxious gas. And she's like, I'll meet with you tomorrow. I'll meet tomorrow." So they meet on base and talk about this crazy secretive thing. And she like draws what the alien looked like that they were doing the autopsy on. And that's the,
The
I forgot
typical
the term.
gray, yeah, or Zeta Reticuli.
Thank you. So that was interesting. And then all of a sudden that nurse gets like whisked off in an airplane and she dies very mysteriously. So I just thought that was interesting.
Is. I've heard stories of that being told in other ways too, where he's walking away and he puts a piece of the wreckage in his pocket. His kid still has it to this day.
Okay.
Then that goes away. There's a lot to
Yeah.
this. There's so many books written about this one night.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I will say, for as hard as it was to grasp onto, very interesting episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
I think that if you want to get into UFOs, I wouldn't suggest this just because I just think it's a lot of dramatics. I think there are better stories out there. I think this was a fun episode. There's no doubt about it. And I
Oh,
watched it with my wife, who's just rolling her eyes the whole time.
thanks.
But I think the thing that got me kind of to question this whole thing is when we get to Robbie Lazar.
Yeah, speaking of dramatics.
Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar is still famous when it comes to the world of UFOs. He's somebody who pops on to the talk shows, like we mentioned before.
And he looks like Stephen King light.
He does. He could be his cousin easily or
Yeah,
something.
absolutely.
And he's kind of like the point person when it comes to Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar is somebody who also he debunks a lot of what people are talking about. He would agree with a lot of what I'm saying in the sense of, well, there's no information, there's no data, this and that. There's nothing to prove. he went from believing in the, I forget what the fuel is called, something 115, which is what supposedly power, like element 115 that powers the UFOs, and he was doing all of this research based on it, to thinking it's just nonsense. It's all made up.
Well, that makes me kind of put more stock in him, that he's not just saying this is 100%. Like, I put stock in all of this. The fact that he's looking into it actually makes me kind of more interested in what he has to say.
There's a great documentary on Netflix called Bob Lazar, Area 51 and Flying Saucers. And I watched part of it months ago. I just can't watch any more UFO documentaries personally. Yeah. I've watched a lot of them. And I just feel as though what he's doing is he is debunking things that he has always knew was false. And I feel as though what he is doing it just to get the attention, just to kind of sell the documentary, just to get his name much more prominent. Now, for whatever reason, when I say Bob Lazar, you don't say, oh, you mean the guy who ran a prostitution ring?
Now, I have so much information on his arrest because I was so curious when I heard you say that he had the prostitution ring.
Yeah, my wife was all of a sudden interested in the whole episode of Unsolved Mysteries once I shared that with her.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not covered at all in Unsolved Mysteries, but it is a tasty story. So I don't know if you wanted to say it. I don't
know. No, you please.
Okay, so he is in Nevada. Now, I thought all prostitution was legal in Nevada, but apparently that they have laws against engaging in prostitution outside of licensed brothels. And they have laws against, quote, encouraging others to become prostitutes and against living off the proceeds of prostitutes. So I did such a deep dive about prostitution in Nevada this morning because I was so curious about it. But he solicited a sex worker, which I know is the proper term to call him now. So he solicited her and was like, look, I'm going to get you into the 21st century. This is his theory. He's like, we got to computerize your like John's list.
Right.
And we are going to be efficient about it. Now you could call that being a pimp. I would. He rents out an apartment for her by the week and just keeps her there and has her, you know, if you would say turning tricks, I don't know, but he also acknowledged his George Knapp, who we'll talk about. He acknowledged that Lazar had a questionable path that included some work at a local brothel. So he got in trouble for doing all that. It was kind of a ethical gray area with everything. He says, of course, well, the government's trying to shut me up because I know all about their UFOs. But he ended up pleading guilty. I think he got 150 hours of community service and he was ordered to stay away from all brothels.
And also undergo psychotherapy.
Yeah, and undergo psychotherapy.
I want to hear those tapes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that prostitution was fully legalized everywhere. Mm-hmm. No, it's like, I think of it, I guess it's just decriminalized, like Amsterdam or something. I'm not really sure.
It's actually, I feel like I am like an expert now because I did a deep Wikipedia dive, but it's actually, they get 10% of their revenue in through prostitution in Nevada through legal channels. And the other 90% is illegal prostitution. And that's because it's not legal in Vegas. It's not legal in Reno. It's not legal where the capital is. So there's a lot of these big, big cities where it's not legal, but you get your bachelor parties or whoever going like, woo, what happens in Vegas? So I don't know. I think a lot of people turn a blind eye, but I was interested to know, which has absolutely nothing to do with Unsolved Mysteries, but I was interested to learn that they actually have one of the highest rates of child prostitution and of sex trafficking.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, it seems as though it lends itself to the acceptance almost of it.
And I see, I would have said the complete opposite. I feel like when you're dealing within legal bounds, like when you give a little, and I don't know, it seems like you could meet halfway and be doing decent stuff, but it seems like a lot of people are from like Utah, Oregon, California are kind of like trafficking people through Nevada. But it's interesting. I read a lot about it.
Scary.
They said that like you're not allowed to leave during the work hours and how, you know, I don't know. It's really neither here nor there, but it is interesting. So check out that Wikipedia
Yeah,
article.
there's I think there's a lot of documentaries that talk about these like bunny houses and stuff like that. I don't know. Whenever I see anything on them, I think, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to, you know, to traffic drugs and you know, child prostitution or, you know, get somebody, I don't know. I just think that it's such although I feel like, you know, if you want to do this, that's fine. I really don't care. You know, if you want to be a prostitute, I think it's, you know, genuinely your body and it's if that's what you want to do and it helps you pay your rent, like I don't care.
Yeah, same.
I just feel as though if you're going to do it, it needs to really be kind of and I hate to, you know, go down this to make this comment, but it should be kind of government regulated.
Yeah.
It should, you know, it should be. It, I don't
In a
know.
perfect world, you know, it would all work out, but there's always going to be people looking, lurking in the shadows, so.
Yeah. Maybe my next life I'll deal with that more. But you,
Oh.
well, I'll be like Elliot Ness. I'm gonna bring it down. Oh. So you bring up George Knapp. Have you ever heard of George Knapp?
Never before.
All right. George Knapp is somebody who I also have dealt with a number of times through my podcast, my other podcast. And he is one of the hosts of Coast to Coast Radio. Have you ever listened to Coast to Coast?
Have not.
Coast to Coast is a just real quick, it's on every night of the year. It is they interview UFO people, paranormal investigators, and everything fringe. They have psychics come on every night for 3 hours for the past like 30 years.
Okay.
And Coast to Coast AM is now a website. I think it's coasttocoastam.com. And it is phenomenal. Like everybody who's anybody is on Coast to Coast. I was not, but I think George Knapp is one of the nicer people. He's not super into a lot of this stuff. He's super Christian. So that's
No.
where, and there's also, he works with a man named George Norrie, who's also the Christian. So you listen to it, there's a little bit of Jesus talk, but that's okay, I
Okay.
guess. But anyway, so that's where he kind of falls into this. He wouldn't go on to Coast until after this had already aired on Unsolved Mysteries. But George Knapp is one of the well-respected investigative reporters.
Yeah, I saw that he won like multiple Emmys for his reports.
Yeah, he was off my radar until he was on Coast to Coast. There are so many investigative reporters in the world. It's really hard to keep up on them all. But there was also Art Bell. Art Bell passed away. Art Bell was the original, or one of the original Coast to Coast hosts, and he was phenomenal. He was, you could do an entire podcast on just Art Bell's interviews that go right down to time travelers coming on online and talking about technology that they should have no idea that is going to exist in 15 years from when they were talking about
Ooh, that's
it.
fun.
Amazing, amazing stuff. But anyway, all right, that's totally a different topic.
Well, does this bring us to Allagash yet?
Yeah, Allagash.
This for me is the whole reason that I picked this episode.
Really?
Mainly for the image of four grown men sitting in a canoe together. That
Canoeing.
canoe was about 1 inch above the water.
Yeah.
I don't know what the weight limit is. I don't know how many grown men can, and I don't know how many grown men should fit in a canoe
Four is too
together, but
many, I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say
it
four is
felt
too
like
many.
too much. And okay, so to backtrack, we meet the unfortunately named Jack Weiner, who has reoccurring nightmares in 1988. And it's like your stereotypical abduction nightmare. We see these naked men, like hands over their crotches, naked men, and it's all like fuzzy and just the background is just like vague, colorful. It's interesting. So in the dream, he's like, I think I'm in danger, and I think I see an alien coming towards me. And he tells his twin brother Jim, and Jim's like, I have the same nightmare, and I woke up feeling violated. So they get together and they talk, and they think that this probably happened from that time that they were abducted by aliens in 1976. this doesn't seem to be too repressed. Everything I read said that they would tell all their friends and family about it and that everybody was aware of it, but few people believed them. So they're with their friends, Chuck Rack and Charlie Fultz.
Chuck Rack. I love
that.
Whenever he says his name, I'm like, is that his whole name? Chuck Rack? Or?
And, you know, I read on his website, I found his like Etsy profile and everything because they're all art school guys. And I read on his website that that is not how you even pronounce his last name. It's actually pronounced Rock.
Ah, even cooler. Chuck Rock.
Yeah.
So, are you a rapper?
Chuck Rock. So they figure out it's back to the camping trip. So in 1976, the four of them went on a 2 week long camping trip along the Allegash River in Maine. And apparently it was by like a sacred mountain to the Native Americans. And all of a sudden, Jim begins to notice a strange light. He sees it hovering above him for like 30 seconds. And then it just, boop, just disappears, completely gone.
Right.
On the fourth night. Oh, sorry.
No, I just cleared my throat. Sorry, coronavirus.
Oh, okay. On the fourth night, they were night fishing. So they build this fire, this huge, huge fire to guide them back because they said, you know, you're in the wilderness out there. You need something to guide you back to shore. They build this huge fire that should burn for hours and hours. So they're out there, four men in a canoe. And Chuck Rock in the back says he just like got that weird feeling that somebody's watching him. So he looks over his shoulder and that same like sphere of light is behind him. So they're like, you know, let's signal this thing. Let's see what it says. So they have a flashlight and they like, I guess, Morse code signal SOS to it. Yeah. And the light starts coming towards them. So they're like, we better get out of here. So they start like hightailing it back to the shore. They're going so fast. Everybody but Chuck is like
right. is
canoeing with all their might. They're even like putting their hands in the water.
He's
trying
just
to scoop.
Like,
he's just paralyzed by fear. Yeah. He's looking behind him like mouth agape. Like I would have tossed him out and been like, take him. He's not helping.
I'm sorry. I would have been Chuck. I would have been like, what is going on?
Yeah. So, well, the next memory that they even have of that is being back on shore and staring up at the object. And I have to say, I think the Chuck Rock reenactor gets my MVP reenactor award for this episode. He's just still sitting in the canoe. Everybody's outside of it. They're on shore.
This was a big reenactment, I thought. I thought this was, they seem to have really done a lot more production on this.
Yeah.
Like, and on location.
It's really one of our only reenactments, this episode. Well, I guess, you know, we get the one where he's talking to the nurse, but they were in a river, they were canoeing, they did have some production value here.
Now, what I liked about this story was the fact that they talked about, and it could have went down this rabbit hole, missing time. Missing time is one of the number one indicators that you've gone through some form of an abduction.
And they know the time's missing because when they come back, their fire is burnt out. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, a fire, depending on the size of the fire, I mean, we're talking like it could be like a 2 hour fire, 3 hour, depends. But, you know, these guys seem like they knew kind of what they were doing. I mean, they were smart enough to be able to be in a canoe altogether and not have it sink. But yeah, missing time is one of those telltale signs.
It makes sense.
And that's usually whenever there is missing time, that's where we bring in hypnosis.
Right. Yeah. They said that they thought that they were only gone for about 20 minutes, but they estimated that the fire should have lasted them a few hours. So they decided to bring in UFO researcher Ray Fowler. He puts them under hypnotherapy. And it was so creepy because we actually heard the hypnotherapy, like their actual hypnotherapy recordings, and it skeeved me out. I can't tell you why, but just, you know, being there.
It was that like old tape recorder sound, you know, it was kind of creepy. Those things always creep me out whenever I hear, and there's a tone to it, and you know this tone, the under hypnosis tone, and
it's monotone,
and it's, to me, it's really, really, it's like a violation in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
think you can consent to whatever you're saying then, so.
But yeah, I mean, so they show them. I mean, he's describing what he's seeing, and his friends have taken their robes off, and they're all sitting in the Schwitz.
Yep, exactly.
That's what it looks like. My wife said, "What is this? A Schwitz?" A Schwitz is an old Turkish or Russian steam bath that men tend to all go into and rub each other with grape leaves.
Well, it did look like that, and it was all like Vaseline camera images, so yeah. It could be like the steam rising up and stuff. But they said that these through the reenactments, they say, or through the hypno recollection, they say that
I like that word. Is that a word? Did you just coin hypno recollection?
I think I made it up.
I'm writing it down. It's yours.
Okay, thank you. Well, they claim that their blood, urine, and semen was stolen from these aliens, which is kind of an odd detail, I thought. But they said that it was like a medical exam was being conducted on them. So they say, we get into Jim's hypnotherapy, and he's just like, oh, they're not coming near me because they know I'm going to kick their butts. Like, he's trying to be like,
yeah,
the bad guy. Like, I'm so tough. I'm so cool. It's like, you're no Chuck Rock, buddy.
That guy who's drooling over there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
So, you're not him.
We get into Jack's hypnotherapy. Jack says that they're like communicating into his brain without speaking, that it's all going to be okay. Just do what they say. Nobody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, telepathy is a big thing where a lot of people claim they cannot, they can't pinpoint the sound of the voice. They never see the mouth move. All they're looking at are these large eyes. A lot of people also state that when you have a larger brain, this is all, with species, the eyes get bigger. So this is another theory as to these aliens being future us. And they're coming back for DNA. That's the big theory.
The head is always bigger, too. Like, they do have a bigger brain in there.
Yeah.
Like, up top.
Yeah, and there's so many theories as to what the grays are. Drones, not even, you know, they're just kind of just machines, you know, bio machines. But yeah, it's very creepy whenever I hear these type of things. They took samples of their fluids and their blood and their urine and their semen. I'm not, because they're sticking sticks in places where they don't belong. We didn't hear anything intimate going on. So, but no. I've heard that though. There are stories out there of having relations with these creatures.
I mean, how else do you get it, you know?
Well, the sticks, I guess, like very long. Yeah, I don't want to think about that. Thank you. All right. But it's cold like a doctor's office. That's his description.
Yeah, in one of them, Chuck Rock, our buddy, or Chuck Rock, he says, like, I could see the exam happening to Charlie, and they had this, like, silvery, rounded thing that they were kind of putting all over his body, just like a future medical tool, basically.
Yeah. This is the first time that I recall there being other people in the room when these exams are going on. Usually it's a real, like a couple of the grays and the person on the exam table. It could be that he's recollecting something in the corner for the, you know, and most people maybe not noticing that these people are just sitting there like zombies, not helping.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense that if you're going to do this and have nobody believe you, your victims, if you're the alien, and if you're going to do this to somebody, it seems like you would want to kind of separate them. But maybe they were in like a trance or something, but they all kind of come back down to earth. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. We got there. But yeah, so they have their drawings. This is a big conspiracy theory of mine. They're four friends from art school, and they made a ton of different drawings, which we will put on the Facebook page, of their abduction experience. And I'm just thinking, is this a way to sell art?
See, I would say yes, but in my own personal experience, I'll share this. When I worked in this place in Long Beach, New York, we had a number of people who would come in and just basically not spend a dime and just hang out all day talking about their own personal experiences. One particular person used to make these little alien statues out of clay, and he would put them in his kiln, and he would make these large ones, but he wouldn't sell them. He would just give them to us because he's like, I make so many of these. It's like my therapy to deal with this. So that was the one time where I'm thinking, all right, you're not doing it for money. These are really beautifully made, like little statues, and we would offer him money, but he would never take money. And we're talking like a couple hundred over the course of years.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sell them, and when we saw him, we'd buy him lunch, but he would, you know, just be one of these guys who just, it's what gets him through the day.
And
so that was weird.
Well, yeah, and I have to say our guys, our Allagash Four, are not those kind of guys, because they are still to this day selling their paintings on their websites. And I found Chuck Rock, who we will dive a little deeper into, but the Jack and Jim, the two twins, they're selling like postcards and stuff. So I wanted to buy one because I was like, this is like perfect for our imaginary Unsolved Mysteries Rewind office.
To my number one fan.
Exactly, Mark. So I wanted to get one, and they're just downloads. I was like, okay, I am not paying $2 just for a download.
Download? That's interesting.
Yeah, but I guess unfortunately,
talk about screwing the fan. Jeez.
Seriously, but I guess Jack, I think it's Jack, has MS now, and so they're trying to raise money to pay for a lot of his bills and stuff. So I can't fault that. And you know, you got to do what works. But
now I do want to just mention one thing. I love this story. But it's not the first time I've heard it. I've heard this story dozens of times, this exact story. I've heard it from friends of mine. This is a story that there are tons of books written. There are this exact story. I went out with my friends, I'm driving along, and all of a sudden this happens. I'm camping out, and all of a sudden this happens. And, you know, little details change here and there. There was a movie called Fire in the Sky, and Travis Walton, this is one of the more popular of the cases. And if you just kind of Google Travis Walton and Fire in the Sky, you'll see it. It's a 1993 movie. And that his incident happened a full year before the one we're talking about. And it's so similar, and it was so popular, that I feel as though it's a copycat, personally.
You feel that the Allagash is the copycat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are all copycats of each other. Mm-hmm. And I know I say this on my other podcasts, and piss people off. It's just my own opinion, but I don't believe that they're all right. You want to draw pictures of things that you might have seen and they're all similar. I cannot explain that, but what I can explain is a public story that's being retold a slightly different way.
Yeah, I have the feeling that this is going to be like our most emailed, contacted episode that we're doing. And I'm not trying to take away from anybody's beliefs at all. Never is that my intention.
We both believe we're just that this could be real.
Yeah.
I just don't believe people. That's my problem.
I totally agree, because people lie. And they said with the nurse who we were talking about earlier, when they were talking with Glenn Dennis, he was like, I know she didn't lie because she didn't know how to lie. And instantly that takes away some credibility in my mind, because everybody lies.
Yeah. I've been known to bend the truth. Sure.
What?
Yeah, I know. But
are we even doing a podcast right now?
I'm a girl, so I have a very masculine voice. Not really. I don't have the most masculine voice. I just feel as though I don't want anybody to. I don't think this really is out to prove anyone one way or the other either. This particular episode of Unsolved Mysteries, it's really just putting it out there, and it's fun to watch. But there's nothing here concrete.
No, and in fact, Chuck Rock, our buddy, he did an interview in 2016. And here's where it kind of gets interesting. So he said that the whole thing was just a monetary gain. He says that they did see the lights in the beginning. That much is true. They went and they told a park ranger about what had happened. And the park ranger said, oh, there's an opening in town, and I think you're seeing those big lights, you know, that they do up in the sky, those spotlights, that, and I think that's probably what you were seeing. He said there's no way that those were spotlights. So he fully believes that there was some kind of odd light in the sky, but he said that the abduction story was only made to gain fame and fortune. He said that they had taken, I had to Google what this is because I'm so uncool. They had taken an Afghan temple ball. Do you know what that is?
Yes.
Okay. So it is this like very, very strong hashish that puts you into a dreamlike state. And he said like, we were stoned out of our minds when we were out there on the river, which, you know, four guys in the 70s taking a
Sounds like a
trip.
good time.
Right? I know. And it sounds believable, you know, that that's what they were doing. And so he says that's what happened. He said that the stories about the fire were greatly exaggerated. He said the biggest log that they put on was probably like 3 inches in diameter. And that they went on Joan Rivers and they did all these kind of interviews, and he was just going along for the ride. So the other three, this actually made me sad, they completely ostracized him. They said he's a drunk, he's a violent man, and we don't want anything to do with him. So sadly, he is kind of kicked out of the clique.
That is, yeah, that, I mean, that's pretty sad.
I mean, they were friends from 1976 until 2016, so just to kick him out 40 years later, but
Now,
I don't know.
there was another incident that I'm going to say really quickly. It even predates both of the stories that we just talked about. And this happened on October 11th, 1973. And then you can find an interview with this person on my podcast, On the Odd. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. This is one of the first interviews with this particular person. It was the first time he spoke out about this in like 45 years. His name is Calvin Parker. And he wrote a book called Pascagoula, which is a town in Mississippi, The Closest Encounter. And this was a legendary case. Thing is that Calvin Parker had this, he was really just a simple fisherman, really just wanted to live a normal life. And he had this really wild experience with a UFO, and people were offering him a ton of money. This was nationwide coverage in 1973. Books were written about this. There's all of the this Greek I forget his name. This guy Stefano. He came from Greece to just write a book about this in the 70s and to try to find Calvin Parker. And Calvin Parker turned down money, fame, everything. Because he just didn't want to talk about what he experienced. But now he's older. He's like in his 70s. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to finally tell my story. And he's still, you know, really pretty much a simple guy. I tend to believe a story like that over the running right to the people who are willing to pay for it.
Yeah, it does. It does just have more truth to it in my mind. It's like we were saying kind of about Bob Lazar or Lazar, where it's like, okay, if you're willing to say that some of this might not be true, or like, I don't want to talk about it because I was poked and prodded and sticks were shoved where they shouldn't be, okay, I'm more likely to believe that than like, oh, hey, you guys, guess what happened to us? And if the Allagash Four was aware that there was all this buzz around this guy, maybe there's a motive for this story.
In comparison, Calvin, you know, was harassed and he moved. And I think he went by a different name for like a couple decades. And I don't even think he shared it with his wife for like 20 years. It was one of these things where he literally wanted nothing to do with it. I have to look into him
Interesting.
because last time I spoke to him, he wasn't feeling very well. He's older. He's didn't take care of himself. And, really nice guy though. Super. One of the, I don't know. He's just one of these down south kind of simple, cool guys who has a really amazing story to tell.
Awesome.
But anyway, so that brings us to, let me get to your notes.
I think that's it.
Oh yeah, is that the whole thing?
Yeah,
Holy
I think
moly.
so. I'm left with more questions than answers, but I look forward to reading about that Battle of LA. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, Battle of LA is fun. If anything, there's more to that than all of the stories that we just talked about. Area 51 maybe being the exception, just because if you believe in the things that the government is doing, you really are going to love Area 51 because it's such a mystery and it's still uphold. What about the thing that just happened this past, just a few months ago? The
Oh, the storm Area 51.
yeah, did you follow that at all?
Yeah, I was following it just to, oh, it was such a mess. I was hoping nothing bad would come of it.
Oh, I was opposite. I was hoping something terrible would happen. No, of course not. But I just, yeah, that was one of those weird things. It's kind of like they can't stop us all,
I
really,
know it.
because I think, you know, the government seems to have a lot more control than we realize.
Yeah, they're certainly gonna try. It was just one of those things that caught traction. Like there was a Facebook page in here in Florida when the whole Hurricane Irma was going on, and it was like shoot your gun into
Oh
the hurricane to try and destroy it.
It
And
worked.
that gained such traction. Yeah. Hey, we're still here.
Yeah.
But no, so there's just these weird little fringy groups that I think get out of control, and I think that they grow too big and too fast and become publicized. So that's what I think. But it seemed like it had a happy ending. Nobody died.
Yeah. And I think I told you a little bit about the theory that's believed about whatever happened to the crash at Area 51. And that's between, was it 1947 and even current time? But let's go to when we started talking about Area 51, which is probably the early 80s. The technology that was developed over the course of 35 years is so dramatic with whether it, with computing, with lasers, with even the Wi-Fi that we use. It's all kind of magic, and it's all stuff that when you really break it down, where did this knowledge come from? And that's really the big question here is when you're talking about where ideas come from, you need to have a foundation. And that foundation seems to kind of appeared out of nowhere in the late 40s.
Yeah, I know all these incidents in America started in 1947. I was like, what was going on in 1947 that just made people grasp to this idea? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very strange theory. It's a wonderful, it's a fun rabbit hole to go down. It's just there's so much information. And personally, when the internet was first developed, back when I was a kid. So back before the internet, even I was on a form of the internet called a bulletin board system. You might have heard of BBS systems, and we're talking like 1982 or something, and you were not even a thought.
No.
And you'd connect your computer to a phone, and you connect, and the first things that you would go and download or read would be UFO stuff. In my opinion, that was probably the first few searches I had when I first got more internet type of stuff, like online. Most people, the first thing that they look up are JFK assassination, UFO, conspiracies. And that's why Unsolved Mysteries is so important, I think. I think it encapsulates a lot of this. I think that it also really carries the torch a little bit because at this point, all everyone knew about the conspiracies and the JFK assassination and UFOs, that it was time to make a whole television show about it. And that's why I feel as though Unsolved Mysteries did so well. You know,
It's just the best, and it still has such a huge following today.
yeah, it's a shame that it was ever taken off the air. Did we ever talk about why it was taken off the air?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I learned that the reason why, what was the network it was on? Was on NBC.
I don't remember.
Whatever network it was, they decided they no longer wanted to, they wanted to cater to a younger audience. So they canceled Unsolved Mysteries, even though it was one of the top shows on the network, and they replaced it with some show that has nothing to do with it towards like a younger demographic.
I gotcha.
So that's a real shame. Same thing with I'm always wondering why Cops was canceled. It's one of those kind of weird things.
Yeah.
I never watched it, but it seems to be another show where things are very, very, it's very popular and people seem to habitually watch it.
Yeah,
The Bad Boys soundtrack alone is a hit.
it's
Makes us feel Rastafarian.
a hit.
But yeah, so I guess that's it. Unsolved Mysteries, Season 7, Episode 21.
I think we did as best as we could.
In the can. Please check us out on Facebook. You can look us up, Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. We're on iTunes now. You can leave a
Woohoo!
review. If you leave a review, you get a big hug, a big virtual
Aww.
hug.
Yeah, a social distance tug.
Yeah. 5 stars. 5 stars only. If you have something negative to say, just shoot us an email.
Or keep it to yourself. Either way, I'm fine with either.
Tell a friend. You know what? Hopefully I didn't insult anyone in this episode. I do believe that these type of things are do have some merit. I think they remained exactly what the show envisioned for it, and that's unsolved. We don't know. We don't have the answer.
Tonight, we have been confronted with an entire catalog of unexplained and unsolved events. Tune in next time as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind discusses another collection of unsolved mysteries. Until then, we can only look and wonder.